Welcome, 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 welcome. You have found the Pirate Monk Podcast. I'm Nate Larkin, your host, here with the most Reverend Mondo.
Yes, indeed.
Our fearless engineer. And introducing this week.
Introducing.
Our co-host from the West Coast.
Yes.
Live from Station...
Station B.
S-L-O-B.
Yes, S-L-O-B.
In San Luis Obispo.
Mm-hmm.
None other than the fabled,
yes,
Aaron Porter.
Aaron Porter, welcome, brother.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Yeah, here through the marvels of modern technology.
Yes, indeed.
Doesn't it sound like he's sitting right in the room with us?
Yes, it does.
And isn't it a relief not to have him right in the room with us?
Yes, it is.
You know you're going to pay for that one. That's all I got to say. I was going to hold back on that other part, but no longer.
And we got a great show coming up. Steve Creighton is here from E3 Partners. It's going to be a fascinating interview. Can't wait for that conversation, so hang on for it.
Oh, yeah.
But meantime, Mondo, sir,
yes.
Aaron can't see it from where he's sitting, but you are sporting yet another pair of the plaid shorts.
Yes, I am, sir. Yes, I am. A little subdued today, though.
Yeah, you've gone gray.
Gone gray.
Is that symbolic? I mean...
No.
Your life has not gone.
I'm tired today. Maybe that's what it is.
Okay.
I'm a little sleepy, but I'm okay though. I'm okay.
I know that feeling. I know it well.
Yeah. What's the sad is this like the fifth week in a row I haven't run out of plaid shorts yet.
There must have been a good deal there at Target.
Yeah, absolutely.
Huh? Yeah.
At Marshall's. Yes.
Marshall's. Yeah. There you go.
Yes, indeed.
All righty.
So what did you do this weekend, Nate?
Well, you know, it was a busy weekend. We had a volunteer. Photographer in town, Gabriel and Justine Tuller came in from West Palm Beach, drove through the night. God bless them.
Okay.
And they came up to do a photo shoot with
right.
Constance and myself. You remember Constance?
Yeah, Constance Rhodes
from the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Plans are moving ahead for the Sex and Skinny college tour in the fall.
Okay.
Yeah.
Aaron, I'll let you reply on that one.
Yeah, I saw some of these pictures on Facebook. You actually posted some
really?
Of these pictures.
Yeah, I put a couple on the page.
Okay.
Yeah.
And by process of elimination, we know who the sex was in the Sex
Are you
and
saying that
tour.
I'm not skinny? Come on. We spent the whole afternoon trying to shoot around my double chin. It was awful.
Yeah, I was actually trying not to say that. I kind of went the back door, but you said it. Yeah. But you did, you know what? You did look really sexy. I liked some of those poses where you just kind of leaned back on the couch and looking very casual.
It
was good.
Yeah.
I'd go to that tour.
You know, it only took about 1,000 shots to get those three pictures. I am.
Well, they were good. Well worth the time. Well worth the time.
I am
so
a study in self-consciousness.
Start?
What?
When does the tour start?
It starts in September. If I were prepared, I would tell you exactly when it's. Oh, September 20th. It's actually this. We're just doing an initial rollout. We're doing two colleges in Indiana. We'll be at Anderson University and Indiana Wesleyan University, schools that are about 75 miles apart, and we'll be bouncing back and forth between the two campuses for a week.
And how's
it gonna
play
out? I'm really excited about this because, you know, the number one issue on college campuses for guys is, here's no secret, sex.
Right, yeah.
Guys tend to obsess about
sex.
Sex,
yeah, and lust and things.
And the number one issue for girls is appearance, eating, body issues.
Hmm.
So we're there to hit both issues head on. And, you know, the fascinating thing is that the issues are really driven by, at the core, the same dynamic. And because he tends not to understand her and she tends not to understand him, our typical pattern is to trigger each other.
Mm.
We actually make it tougher on each other just by the way we deal with shame.
Wow.
So it's going to be a interesting week. I'm
That's cool.
really looking forward to exploring that topic with Constance.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear more about how that goes, and we'll see if it expands into something that goes beyond September into other colleges. It's going to be really good.
Yeah, we're hopeful. We'll see how it goes.
All right, so tell me, did you make it back to the meeting after your Alaskan getaway?
I did.
What a great question.
It was so good to get back to my home meeting here in Franklin, Tennessee.
Awesome.
Nice to get in a room, sit with brothers.
What was your topic this week?
Topic this week was, it's strange, you know. We went around the room during the initial check-in, and a lot of us checked. I think three of us in the room out of maybe 25 guys checked in with fatigue. We were just tired. I was one of those guys. And so the fellow who was chairing the meeting selected as the topic fatigue.
Fatigue.
So when we went to breakouts, I got a chance to talk some about how I was feeling and you know, the dangerous place that puts me in.
Tired can be a very dangerous trigger for all of us.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So how does that play out for you personally?
Well, like all addicts, I'm especially in danger when I am, hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Active addiction, I remember in my years of active addiction, the one overwhelming feeling that I recall is fatigue. It seemed like I was tired all the time, when I would resurface into consciousness, because it's very, very exhausting running two lives. And the fatigue itself then would set me up for more acting out. I also, in those days, and the reason I think I was really feeling tired Monday was that I had just committed to a big writing project, a book, a completion date on a book in early February, and all of a sudden it was like deja vu. I had the feeling of the massive term paper that I've got to get done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I tend just to get tired in the face of a big project. It's my instinctive response. What I used to do during active addiction was, the bigger the project I was facing and the tighter the deadline, the more I acted out. I would use lust as my reward, as my incentive, as my drug to wake up, as my drug to go to sleep. And I would act out more intensively when I had a big project, which would only... it really impeded my efficiency and effectiveness. Mm-hmm. So I almost delivered the project late. I always delivered the project late.
I was going to say, how much more time have you had since you have been out of active addiction?
Oh, I was astonished when I got into recovery. It felt like my available time tripled, along with my available creative energy. But in order to stay there, I need to stay right-sized. And, I do have this Messiah complex. I do try to be the 50-foot Jesus. I have a tendency not to be sane in the evaluation of my own talents and resources. And so I overcommit, and I fill my schedule up to the point where I start to get tired again. So anyway, it was great for me to talk that through with my brothers on Monday night, and then on Tuesday, sat down with my wife and talked it through some more.
Awesome.
Realized, I need to make some modifications to my schedule. I need to face reality. I need to take care of myself a little better.
Yeah. It's important, man.
What I tend to do when I get overcommitted is start to cheat on sleep, stay up too late, eat on the run, and stop going to the gym and doing that stuff that'll actually give me energy. Mm-hmm. And all of those decisions make me more tired and at the same time increase my vulnerability to my addiction.
Yeah.
So a renewed commitment to self-care.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing how discipline translates into every part of our life that, people talk about the discipline of daily time in God's word and things like that, but we don't realize that we're undisciplined in our eating, our sleeping, our exercise, that very quickly our spiritual disciplines and every other type of discipline goes as well.
Yeah.
They're all so connected. So you can't cheat on one without seeing the effects in all the others.
We are to pull out the phrase, we are embodied spirits. That's how God has created us. And our physical health affects our spiritual health. Mm-hmm. And to neglect the spiritual is to pay, to neglect the physical is to pay a spiritual price, and vice versa.
Well, very good. I am excited that you made it back to your guys and made it back from Alaska. No Kodiak bear incidents.
Yes.
No, we had black bear incidents, but no Kodiaks. That's good. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Black bears, they're wusses. You can take them.
You could take,
you could take them with one paw behind your back.
There you go.
So we're excited about the guest in the studio, excited to come back and chat, because I want to hear about some of these Asian opportunities that are coming up, and maybe a little talk about I Am Second.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We also have some letters as well today.
All right.
Oh, so we got to do letters first. All right.
We'll get to all of that when we come back on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. We are pressing on with some letters. So, Nate, do you have some that you can share with us?
Yeah, I sure do. Our folks have been writing. They've been sending us letters to letters@samsonsociety.org. Nothing yet in the physical mailbox there at box 224.
I'm feeling kind of bad for the P.O. box, man.
It's lonely.
Kind of lonely over there.
Yeah.
Well, it's traceable. I can't use my fictitious email account if I said it that way.
But people are writing to us. Here's a great letter came in from Nick Mucci. He writes to the Pontiff Pirate and the Most Reverend Mondo.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
He says, "Brothers, first, thanks for making me laugh as we all reflect on the seriousness of our discipleship. So good to be reminded that this journey is not just a struggle, but it can be full of laughter and joy. Anyway, as God has been healing me and freeing me from my sexual addiction, I've found that the largest place where God has set up shop has been in my identity. I've been amazed at how much my weak understanding of my own identity has led me down dark paths of hurt and shame. I've also been equally amazed at how, as God reveals my true identity, freedom continues to grow. You find that true for you as well? Is God carving out our true identity as an essential piece of our recovery? Like how Mondo's freedom to be identified with plaid shorts is a sign of his own freedom? Peace to you and to all the pirate monks. Yo ho ho, a pirate's life for me." Thanks, Nick. What a great letter.
Nick, thank you so much for your wonderful words.
You know what? That is the best letter I think I've ever heard, because it is so connected to what it is to be a Christian. And growing up in an evangelical church, we spent all our time on what it is to become a Christian.
Yeah.
Here are the four spiritual laws. Here's the wordless book.
Yeah.
All we talked about was the gospel in connection with becoming a Christian, and nobody stopped to say the gospel is essential in what it is to be a Christian, to be a new creature. And so then we live under the slavery that the Pharisees lived under, that Jesus came against with both guns blazing. And yet that's the way we live, because we don't understand that in Christ, I am a new creature.
Yeah.
And though I still live in this body of flesh and have flesh desires, that's not me.
Yeah.
In fact, the way we talk about it at Vintage in Templeton is simply, if I can imagine when I die, what is not going with me to heaven, then that can't be me, because part of me is going to live forever.
Yeah.
And so the difference between what's going to stay here, well, that's even now a part of the vehicle, but it's not me.
Yeah.
These desires, this corruption, these sins. And man, what a freedom when I stop identifying myself with the part that was crucified with Christ and realize how God really sees me. So I love that letter.
That's a great letter, and such great insight really into the core issue in this process of progressive sanctification that we refer to as recovery.
Mm-hmm.
It really is learning to be who we are.
Yeah.
And to walk out of this shame in which we've lived, that's divided us from our true self, and animated all these personas that we've put forth, sent a false self into relationship with God, sent a false self into relationship with other people, fled from true relationship into fantasy because we thought we were unworthy of true relationship.
Mm-hmm.
To know that I am loved and lovable, sin has not obliterated the image of the Creator. It's a hard thing to see, those of us who've been deeply shamed, even those of us who've been deeply wounded in our religious experience. A lot of that shame came to us while we were sitting in the pew trying to do and hear the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thank you, Nick. Great letter. All right, this one comes from Newton. Newton writes, I don't know that anyone ever told me the components of a share that you guys talked about a few months back in one of the podcasts. I just listened to it last week. It really changed the way that I shared last night. It was the way I view the meetings. It gave me the courage last night to share something good about my walk and recovery, not just sit in a circle and decrap myself.
Right.
I think it might be cool in one of the podcasts if you guys would talk about two things. One, how to share. And two, the four things you're supposed to do every day. I think you've talked around them, but I don't really know that I've heard them talked about directly. Great letter. Thank you. Thank you, Newton.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron, you want to hold forth on the first one, how to share? How do you share in a meeting?
How do you share in a meeting? I think one of the hardest things for me to bear in mind is... So not just think informationally, but think about what I'm feeling and connect my emotions to that. Because as a man, it becomes really easy to dissect it, remove the information from my life, and then lay it out neatly before other guys to see them nod and say, okay, that seemed honest.
Yeah.
But when I start to actually get honest to a level that I connect my emotions, then I become vulnerable. And that difference between vulnerability and transparency is huge.
Mm.
I think in the beginning of the journey, being transparent meant I was being honest. But that's like being a window people can look through, but they can't touch anything.
Yeah.
And I became the master at being transparent without being vulnerable.
Oh, wow.
And once I realized that I really sucked at being vulnerable, I tried to step into sharing a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really in laying out where I was at and how I felt, and giving some more honesty that wasn't quite as safe, because it's easy to hide dishonesty in honesty.
Oh, brother, ain't that the truth?
So I really, for me in sharing, and it's a hit and miss, because I still struggle with that vulnerability. It's really bringing the emotional content of what I'm going through in with the honest transparency.
Oh, that's good stuff. Good stuff. In regard to the second part of Newton's questions, the four things to do every day, I think what he's referring to are the four components of a phone call. When you're checking in with your silence, you're making that daily phone call. The way we've broken it down here is to say that when you make that call, and to be honest, I like it personally when my silence doesn't pick up the phone. I like to talk to his machine. That's just me. And if I need him to call me back, I'll ask him, please call me back. Or if he gets a second phone call from me quickly, he knows either my message ran over or, you know, I need to hear from him. But the structure that I try to follow and the structure that I encourage the guys who call me to follow is this. Tell me four things. Tell them to me this in this order. Tell me first what you're feeling, then tell me what you're thinking, then tell me what you're doing, and finally, tell me what you're thinking of doing. Now, following along with what you shared about how to share in a meeting, it's really important to begin where guys tend not to begin. it's important for me to stop, feel, and articulate what it is I'm feeling. Because bottom line, I do everything for an emotional reason. I really don't do anything for a rational reason, although I may dress it up with a rational reason. I do irrational things for non-rational reasons. My greatest protection against doing the irrational things is to really face what I'm feeling, to share it with another person. So put a name to it. If you don't know what you're feeling, and a lot of us really don't in the beginning, we just don't have the foggiest idea, then go to the four core emotions, sad, mad, glad, and afraid. Ask yourself which of those four most closely fits your present mood, and then talk for a little bit out of that. Then, after I've shared what I'm feeling, I try to share what I'm thinking. That's usually where I want to default, because I tend to want to live out of my head. Very dangerous place, because I can't successfully live out of my head. Mm-hmm. I can talk out of my head, but I can't live out of my head. However, my thinking can lead me astray unless I share it with somebody else. So I can think the craziest things, and if I'm not sharing what I'm thinking with somebody else, I can lose track of the horizon. Down can become up. I can convince myself of all kinds of nutty things. Somehow just telling somebody else what I'm thinking helps bring clarity. Then share what I'm doing. What I'm doing is going to be a pretty good clue as to where my heart is. I have an almost boundless capacity for surreptitious behavior. It's real important for me to tell the guy I'm walking with exactly what I'm doing. And finally, I need to share that thing that's been whispered to me in the back of my mind. My addict has never fully gone away, and from time to time he makes suggestions of how I might step over the line in the future. Some long-neglected corner that I might revisit, some risk I might take. If I just engage that voice alone, if I don't share with somebody else the crazy thoughts that come in my head, after a while they can gain root, and then in a moment of vulnerability I can find myself swept away. The best way for me to prevent that from happening is to tell the guys I'm walking closest with what the wild part of me is thinking of doing. Mm-hmm. So those are the four things: what you're feeling, what you're thinking, what you're doing, what you're thinking of doing. Thanks for your letter, Newton. Anybody else? You got a question, you've got a comment, you've got a suggestion, please write to us. Drop us a line at letters@samsonsociety.org.
Or visit our lonely mailbox.
Please.
The P.O. Box.
P.O. Box 224. Franklin, Tennessee.
37065.
That's it. And we'll be back on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Oh, a pirate's life is a wonderful life, a roving over the sea. Give me a career as a buccaneer, it's the life of a pirate for me. Oh, the life of a pirate for me.
Welcome, welcome back. We are here with the guest section of the Pirate Monk Podcast. Nate, who do we have today?
Well, sitting right here, almost knee to knee to us here in the... Studio A. Here, where Mondo makes the magic,
mm-hmm.
where he makes the hits, right here, is Steve Creighton from E3 Partners, a guy who I got to was introduced to. I knew you, Steve, by reputation long before we met.
That's not good.
I've heard your name taken in vain around this time around this town for a while, because you've been here a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, your roots with Mullen go back before Mullen was a Christian, right?
Well, we were in the same town at the same time. We were in the University of Florida. I was a college pastor there for 4 years, 80 to 84. He was playing football and I think being a heathen back in those days.
Okay, wow. So you were a college pastor at the University of Florida. tell us the story from there. How'd you get to Franklin? Tell us a little about your family.
Well, let me back up just a little bit before that, because I started, my wife and I, Ann, we've been married 40 plus years.
Wow.
Yeah.
For a guy who's only in his 30s, that's quite an accomplishment.
That's really good. She just grabbed me right out of the crib. And,
yeah.
We actually started out in the Air Force. I was a pilot in the Air Force doing Vietnam.
Oh, really?
And when that ended, I had the opportunity to either stay in the Air Force or go with the airlines were my two choices. And out of left field came seminary. And I wound up at Southwestern Seminary, and upon graduation, went to Florida, served a church there a couple of years as a youth pastor, and then went to Gainesville, spent four great years there working with college students, and it was just a real important time in all of our lives as a family. We were in Dallas for about 7 years at a large church there. I was a single adult pastor. And then West Monroe was my last church I served. I was executive pastor there for a few years. And then came here to the Gainesville area in 95.
To the Franklin area.
Well, yeah.
Okay,
excuse me. Yeah, I said Gainesville, didn't I? Yeah, to the Franklin area in 95 to work with Lifeway Christian Resources and work for them for about 7 years. Three and a half of those years, Ann and I lived in Singapore and traveled all over Asia.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. We had a phenomenal time there and miss it every day. And that really kind of led me to what I'm doing with E3. I've been with E3 7-8 years, and I'm called the Asian strategist and work primarily in Asia. And all my trips right now are to Asia.
Now, E3 is a fascinating organization. Our listeners might be interested to know that E3 partners, they're the people behind the I Am Second campaign.
Yeah.
Shot those amazing films, and I got to be featured in one of them.
Yeah.
Just that neat grassroots campaign for a way to you know, Christians sharing their real lives, their real stories, with other people, Christian and non-Christian alike. That program, I got to meet the E3 people. Went down to Texas and met them a few months ago. Mm-hmm. What a great bunch of folks.
I love this organization. What attracted me as much as anything else were the people.
Yeah.
Great people to work with.
And this is, you know, kind of get it done, lay people mostly,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's one of the refreshing things is most of them came out of, we've got lawyers, we've got account executives, we've got businessmen, solar businesses, we've got that type of people.
So you don't have some huge denominational bureaucracy to get things done.
Right.
It's very entrepreneurial, and I love the philosophy of E3. Now, E3's been doing global work, not very. I Am Second was just about the first thing they ever did in the U.S.
Yeah, right? It is the first thing we've ever did in the U.S. We've always been focused overseas.
Right. And you've been out there planning churches, but doing it in a wonderful, unconventional by modern standards.
Mm.
I think it really strikes at the biblical way of doing things. But planting churches, really believing that the church properly understood is self-replicating.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. We're a service organization. We're there to serve, and we're not there. There's not an E3 church in the world. We want to partner with nationals.
Yeah.
We want to encourage them, support them, strengthen them if we can.
Yeah.
If we're going to be in their way, we're going to get out of their way. But if we can help, we'll help. We've been around about 22 years doing this. The three E's are what makes us, I believe, unique out in the world and in the ministry. We equip believers to evangelize God's world and establish churches. And so those are our three focuses wherever we go: equipping, evangelizing, establishing.
Right.
And we're training others to do that, and we're shoulder to shoulder with them as we do it. I mean,
we
don't say, here it is, you go do it. We're right there with them doing it. Well established I'm sorry?
I was going to ask, just to give some perspective on those three things that you just said, being a church planter and talking with a lot of church planters here in America, how would you describe the difference for people that aren't kind of in that world? Because what you just described that you all do in Asia sounds very different than many of the church planting strategists I've talked to here in the United States.
Well, what we do in equipping is we want to come alongside of a church or a group that wants to begin a church. Generally, we'll work with churches to multiply churches. And what we do in our equipping is build into the DNA of that church that idea, that dream, to not only plant a church, but plant a church that will plant a church, that will plant a church, that will plant a church. As you said, replicating is the real key, is to keep churches with that evangelism mindset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sad to say, in America, we can plant a church, we can start a church, and get some members from other churches and really not lead anyone to Christ at all.
Yeah.
And we build churches on conversion.
Yeah.
That's the focus overseas. It's a total conversion-based building of a church.
And there's enough Baptists in E3 that you guys keep track of stats, right?
We do. We count everything. You know how that is.
Well, that's great. You know, I love baseball and I love Baptists, and it's all about statistics in
exactly,
both of them.
So
give us some statistics, will you, if you got any?
Well, I'll give you this first statistic. We've got enough Baptists in the organization to count, but we don't have enough Baptists in the organization to ruin it quite yet. And I'm Southern Baptist trained, and so, I'm joking about
that. I love
that.
The Baptists.
Let me give you... What God did, really. We haven't done a thing. I tell people when we go to East Asia, we're not doing anything.
Yeah.
I mean, God doesn't need us there.
Uh-huh.
But He's doing such a great work, and the joy we have is to go and watch Him work, and that is a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
That's a great joy. As an organization, in 2009, let me give you our 2009 stats. We saw 4,060 churches planted.
Wow.
In that 1 year. And those churches, when we say churches planted, we'll go back to them next year,
uh-huh.
Visit them, strengthen them, help them plant another one. So they're happening. We mobilized 2,700 North Americans, took that many overseas. But our real strength is those that are the nationals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and mobilizing those 2,700, we probably mobilized 27,000 nationals in that process, maybe more than that.
Uh-huh.
We were able to share the gospel over 600,000 times last year, 213,000 professions of faith. And when I say we have a profession of faith, they're plugged into a church. I mean, that's what we won't go just share the gospel.
Uh-huh.
There's got to be a organization we're going to drive them to,
uh-huh.
when they receive Christ.
That's just amazing.
That's kind of what we've been about over in 09. So, you know, we start a little slower than that, obviously,
uh-huh.
But we've got since the organization started, there's been over 23,000 North Americans mobilized, over 340,000 nationals trained.
Wow.
And shared the gospel over 3 million times, over 1.2 million.
Well, I got to tell you this, Steve, your enthusiasm for what God's doing in East Asia is infectious. And so infectious that I find myself planning to go with you.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Next year, early next year.
Yep. I think we're looking at a March date. I talked
mm-hmm.
to Tim. Looks like a March date to go.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Tell me what I'm going to see when I get there, will you?
Well, you're going to be amazed. East Asia... And I think everybody knows what we're talking about when we say East Asia, but that's what we'd like to keep it as during this podcast. East Asia is changing daily.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you have in your mind of what you think it would be, just throw that out.
Really?
You know, yeah. You're going to see a modern country rapidly. I read in the paper today that a large country in East Asia came in number two as far as economies go. And they're pushing us, the U.S.,
wow.
real hard right now.
Yeah.
That was in today's paper. But it is a very modern country. The first time I went was 2000, and the capital city had 80% bicycles, 10% automobiles, mm-hmm. 10% buses, good infrastructure for subway. The only cars I saw on the road in 2000 were taxis. That's it. Now when you go 80% vehicles, 10% bicycles, the affluence has grown immensely there.
Wow.
They dress like we do. I mean, you know, you're not going to see the little grandmother in the silk pajamas on the street anymore.
Yeah.
You'll run into more McDonald's than probably Chinese restaurants. But it's an amazing transformation. They built an infrastructure, and known for factories, of course, but now there are factories all over mm-hmm. East Asia because they built the infrastructure. I've been on highways that are amazing. Really? I mean, really amazing, all throughout the country, not just in the capital cities, anywhere I go.
Yeah, yeah. Now, how has I'd love to get your sense of how the population in general has fared with a quick westernization. Do you know whether the internet has had as profound an effect on that culture as it's had on ours? And then I also want to hear about how the church is faring.
Okay. The internet, let's start there, because it is blocked a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, you can't get on Facebook there.
Oh, really?
Which is probably a good thing. But
and you can't get on porn sites there.
Well, they are starting to allow that, which disappoints me.
Uh-huh.
But they have blocked a lot of that
right.
over the years. They are really opening up. They're rushing, as you well know, rushing toward capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
But the very interesting thing is... they recognize, they did a extensive study on the economy of the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
extensive study, because they wanted to know how we did it. And to wed capitalism into their current form of governing is pretty amazing. I mean, that's like oil and water, but they're doing a phenomenal job with it. And they recognize that it wasn't our political democracy that made us a great nation. They recognize it really wasn't our economy that made us a great nation. Now, this is an atheistic world over there. Mm-hmm. They came to the conclusion that our religion, Christianity, is what makes our nation great.
Wow.
So, they are...
On what basis do you say that?
There's a book. It's a dated book, but it's pretty current, probably 04, 05, Jesus in Beijing
mm-hmm.
quotes that.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had an economist speak at
at Heibel's conference.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah.
And that guy, listen to this story, this is amazing, that guy was commissioned by the central government in East Asia to study, to do this study. And he came to that conclusion and came to Christ because of it.
Wow.
You know, he said, you know, this is too amazing. And, mm-hmm. and he really explored Christianity. And it's amazing. I love an Asian's mind when they start exploring Christianity. I love to talk to them. They will just... They're real big on facts and real weak on faith. You know, they just can't get that faith stuff. They're very analytical.
Yeah.
I mean, I can give them numbers all day long and they'll go all over those. But when it comes to faith, mm-hmm. They're slow but steady.
Mm-hmm.
Most when I talk to them. Most. And it's they're very, you know, it's not unusual for them to walk up to you and say, Nate, how are you? How much do you weigh? I mean, you know, when they meet you, Nate, how much do you weigh? How much money do you make? You
oh, really?
I mean, those aren't, they don't see that as rude or getting into your business. That's just a normal conversation. You can ask them the same thing, but it transfers over into Christianity because you can walk up to them and say, are you a Christian? But this is their answer.
Yeah.
I love their answer. 99.9% of the time, they'll say, not yet.
Wow.
Not yet. They are rapidly rushing to become a Christian nation. They really are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all God's work. I mean, he is doing some just amazing things. And I have a friend. He manages the only Christian publishing, government-approved Christian publishing house in East Asia. And he was here recently, and he told me this story, which just kind of blows my mind. He said that the central government, in studying all of this, recognizes Christians there as great citizens.
Mm-hmm.
They are on site at all these floods and earthquakes and all of that. In fact, that is so countercultural to them. It's just not... They'll do anything in the world for family, but mm-hmm. outside of family, to do something for your neighbor is just not in their culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so the government sees these people helping and working and digging people out and supplying food and said, what are you doing? Well, we're Christians and we came to help.
Mm-hmm.
And that just shook them up. So they're seen in a good light. But this is crazy. This guy told me this story, and I trust him. You know, I trust him as a source. He said the central government realized that not only were they good citizens, supported the government, loved the government, and they do, mm-hmm. they really do. Their children are well behaved, and listen, in that this one child policy for a lot of Central Asia, that or a lot of East Asia, that has caused prima donnas. I mean, you think about it. You have one child,
mm-hmm.
four grandparents, two parents, and everybody in the world trying to spoil them to death,
right.
and they become, you know,
right.
hard to manage.
Yeah.
And so, but they noticed that Christians' kids were well-behaved and disciplined, etc. And in the, as you know, the Western part, there are other religions.
Yes.
We don't necessarily need to get into naming those other religions, but the other religions are really separatists. They
yeah.
want to form their own. They want to be left alone. They want to do their own laws, their own rules, run
right.
their own religion. And that goes against, of course, East Asia's government. They actually, this atheistic government, comes to the Christian community and said, would you send couples to go live in this Western part and evangelize them and make them Christians so that they will be good citizens like you. So basically, they're sending missionaries.
Isn't that phenomenal?
And there was actually a story of a group that went,
uh-huh.
and the local government tried to stop them, and they said, no, we were sent. And they contacted the central government and said, yeah, you know, support those guys. They're doing good.
Isn't that amazing?
So it's crazy. It's crazy what God's doing over there right now.
And the church continues to grow at a phenomenal rate.
It is exploding. They, you know, the conservative figure thrown out there is 100 million believers in
wow.
that largest country. Now, I think that's way off.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's much, much more. And here's where I base that on. It's not a scientific survey, of course, but I talk to a lot of people, as you might know, when I go there. I talk to large numbers of people,
mm-hmm.
Over 600 this last time there.
Wow.
And oftentimes, as we enter a conversation about Christianity, they will say, my brother is a believer. My mother is. My dad was. My
yeah.
mom, you know.
Yeah.
And so.
And you're talking to people in the government,
I'm businessmen. Talking to people across the whole genre of the country.
Okay.
I'm talking to everybody.
Yeah.
And they're all throwing out this. They have not a friend, a relative.
Yeah.
And now these 100,000 are either getting around a whole lot or there are many, many more.
Oh, the 100 million. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the 100 million.
Yeah, yeah.
The 100 million are either getting around a whole lot or
yeah.
they're just a phenomenal larger number.
Right.
And so, I mean, I'm in touch and work with several house church movements there.
Yeah.
And, you know, not they can't even give you a good figure for how many's even in the house church.
Yeah, yeah.
Number one, they don't want to. They don't want to count the sheep, for one.
Yeah.
But number two, every day, you know, it's the old Acts church. You know, people are added daily to the church, basically, is what's going on.
And that's part of the culture of the church there.
It is. If you're committed to Christ, and every believer there is, you're sharing the gospel.
Yeah.
I mean, they've discovered the cure for cancer, and they don't want anybody else to die of it. We've discovered the cure for cancer, and we're sitting on it.
Yeah.
You know. I'm curious, as I think of Nate heading over there and the stereotype of the Asian culture, if you watch any movie, it's almost always based on a culture of honor and shame. Uh-huh. Those two components make up endless plot lines for us. How, you know, as we think of the deep shame, the family honor, how do you think that, A, is that even a true stereotype, and B, how does that translate into some of the pirate monk type ministry?
That's a great observation. You're right. You're right. It is honor and shame. You see the elderly there are treated like our elderly were treated in early 1900s. I mean, mm-hmm. If you have gray hair, and so Nate's going to be well honored, you know, as old as he is. They really see that as wisdom. They mm-hmm. treat you very, very well, and they see that. They have the same sin is sin is sin. Fallen mm-hmm. man is fallen man is fallen man. So they face the same things. They're much more private about it, of course. Mm-hmm. But the need is there.
Yeah.
So I think the things they are looking at, the things they're publishing in Christians are Christian psychology books, how to have a stronger family type thing.
Really?
How to raise your children. Mm-hmm. They're all over that kind of information because they're struggling with it.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
honestly struggling with it. And they're, I'm sure, because they're fallen men, mm-hmm. They're struggling with the same things we struggle with. So
yeah.
So I think where the Samson Society comes from is not going to be foreign to them.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, it is commonly known that mistresses are a way to go there.
Yeah.
You know, that's just not a, you know, that's kind of how it is.
And more or less excused and accepted this.
Yeah, it's very private.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's very quiet. It's not, nothing's ever flaunted. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Right after the book Samson and the Pirate Monks came out, I did an audio version with Tim Tan,
who good friend.
Also going to be going. He
yeah,
works with Pacific Bridge, and he just kept saying over and over again during the session, "We need this. We need this.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
need this."
Tim knows better than anybody. Really.
Yeah. So we have a universal need for authentic brotherhood.
We do.
Yeah.
We do.
Well, I'm really looking forward to making that trip and to learning and seeing mm-hmm. and sharing and giving what I can give and getting what I can get.
That's, yeah. You'll get more than you can give. You know how that is.
Yeah.
I mean, you try to help in a meager sort of way,
yeah.
and you bring back a boatload. I mean,
yeah.
it's just they... you can't outgive God, you know
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
you know that
yeah,
old saying yeah. is so true there.
Do you think there'd be room for anybody else on the plane?
Yeah, we'd love to take
A few pirate monks.
Yeah, we would take a few pirate monks, and you know, some may want to support you. I think they all need to support you in prayer, of course.
Yeah.
But I think some may even want to get involved with you financially. You didn't tell me to do this, and you may want to edit
yeah,
this
no.
out if you want. I mean, you just think about the people listening to this podcast. If they just send you $10,
yeah,
that would easily pay for your way.
Much more than pay for my way.
Yeah, well, and you may be able to do some good and help some of these seminaries we're going to and that kind of thing, but
yeah,
or may help others that need to go. But yeah, there's always room. I generally, when I go, I take a team. I'm leaving. In fact, next week I'm going back.
Yeah,
and I'm taking a small team next week. But we that's what we do. We mobilize North Americans so that they can get a vision, a picture, a heart, not only for there, but when they get home, they're a different person. And I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to warn you. I think I've told you this already privately. You're going to come back a different person.
Mm.
God's going to do a work in your heart there that's going to change you forever.
Right.
And I'm honest when I say this. I go 5 or 6 times a year, and I never go that I don't come back changed.
Mm-hmm.
He always shows me something different about myself and about what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. It's really amazing.
Well, honestly, Steve, I we had this discussion. I like to fund my own trips, and I don't like to ask, and I don't even have a way for people to give to the Pirate Monk podcast or to the Samson Society. We don't we don't have a checking account.
You got a P.O. box?
We got a P.O. box.
Yeah,
Do you have? Is there a checking account at E3? Could they, if they made a check to E3, could we pass it to you?
Exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you'd like to support the work of E3 Partners,
mm-hmm.
If you'd like to help fund a trip by myself and others, maybe pay for some brothers to go, I expect to pay my own way, but I would really treasure your prayers as well. So go ahead and drop that check in the mail. Would that be tax deductible?
That would be tax deductible. E3 Partners, and that's what you make it out to.
Okay. Just
and in the memo, put China.
Okay. Send that here to Box 224. Send it to the Pirate Monk Podcast, Box 224, yeah. Franklin, Tennessee, 37064. And we'll see it gets
65, correct?
65. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
37065.
Let me say one other thing.
Yeah.
I know you want to pay your way. I know you can pay your way.
Yeah.
Some people can't go.
Yeah.
But they want to give.
Yeah.
Don't take that away from them.
All right.
Because that's their involvement in it. I mean,
I appreciate that.
They're going to pray because they're invested in you, buddy. They want some hide back when they get, you know. Yeah. So they're gonna follow you.
Yeah.
Because of this.
Yeah.
And follow you there in prayers.
Yeah.
And that's you can almost touch the prayers when you're there. It's just you know. I mean, it's not, I hope people are praying for me. You know they're praying for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a real privilege to have you with us, Steve, and a great inspiration. Thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure.
To sit in with us. And we'll be right back with closing thoughts here on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
You may think you're on alone, and there's no way that anyone could know what you're going through. But if you only hear one thing, just understand that we are all the same, searching for the truth. The truth of what we're soon to face, unless someone comes.
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. That was a great interview with Steve. What a guy. I mean, what an amazing ministry he gets to be a part of.
Excited to
hear all the stuff that's going to happen with you over there and all the guys that are going to go with you.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see whether guys want to come along. I'm really looking forward to the trip. I think it'll be about a 1 to 2 week trip.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't have it. And it'll be in late March.
That's incredible.
We'll get solid dates here out as soon as we get them nailed down.
You know, just the numbers just messed my mind up.
Yeah.
You know, without even having to go actually see it.
Yeah.
Just the numbers alone just really changed a paradigm shift totally on what my assumption was.
Yeah. And to know that the church has grown from an estimated at most 1.5 million believers in 1948. To over 100 million today.
Wow.
You know, while it was...
Yeah, I want to see some guys go over there and come back all lit up about what the church in America can be when they see what the church over there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
So Nate, we've got some webmaster information, I believe, that you need to give.
Yeah. We've had some concern about guys, about the SamsonSociety.org website and the fact that... profile pages on the site, and discussions and forums, all that kind of stuff have been indexed by the search engines. This in from our webmaster at JLB Works. He writes, with Ning, we can only control the security of the group as a whole. This week, we've made the Samson Ning, Ning is the platform that the site runs on, we've made it private. This means that only members who are logged in can see any information past the main homepage. In order to view all the member profiles, a member must be logged into the Samson site. Since Google, Yahoo, and Bing can only index pages that are viewed without logging in, they should no longer be able to index individual profiles. That's good news for guys who are concerned about anonymity.
I still have a concern with that, though.
Yeah.
Am I still going to get the date offers? Because I've got 2 date offers in the last month from evidently hot and sexy women who own webcams.
Yeah, man.
So
yeah.
Is that going to mess with that at all?
We are working. I think maybe we need to enlist some more deputies to patrol the site. We try to get those spammers as soon as they jump on. But some of them, they get on in the early hours of the morning and fire off a few of those crazy emails before we can get rid of them.
Yeah.
There are.
So if you're listening, Redneck Earl, with your laptop in Arkansas, your time is coming to an end.
That's right. All right. Julian writes, we've submitted the URL for the Samson Society to the different search engines, so that should be reindexed soon. This means the issue should, for the most part, disappear within 3 or 4 weeks. So that's good news.
So let's break it down for the layman computer folks out there, because we mess with computers all the time.
Right,
But what about for those who are pretty new to the computer game? If you Google Nate Larkin and you want to see his Samson page,
right,
now you will not be able to. Is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. Now, there may still be some cached versions of the page, the stuff that they save from history,
right.
Right. And those can be, it's kind of a process, our webmaster is in the process of making it easier for our individual members. If there's something on a cached page that you want to have eliminated, that requires a direct request from the webmaster, but it can be done.
Okay, gotcha.
But the stuff you write heretofore will not appear.
Yeah, so I can't Google you and find your conversation online. Okay,
yeah.
Awesome.
That's a good thing.
That's a very good thing.
All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up. It's been a good show. By the way, you can get a free transcript of this show. Simply replay it and write down everything we say. And join us next week when our guest will be Michael Card. Until then, it's Nate Larkin, Aaron Porter, the Fearless Mondo, saying goodbye here on the Pirate Monk Podcast. Recovery. Say, whoa. Recovery. You see, there is no shame in living. For real. Even if your back's against the wall.